Rachel followed the administrator across the habosphere to a large metal box that resembled an industrial shipping container. The box was painted with military camouflage patterns and stenciled letters, PSC.
"You'll call the president from in here," Ekstrom said.
Portable, secure, comm, Rachel thought. These mobile communications booths were standard battlefield installations, although Rachel had never expected to see one used as part of a peacetime NASA mission. Then again, Administrator Ekstrom's background was the Pentagon, so he certainly had access to toys like this. From the stern faces on the two armed guards watching over the PSC, Rachel got the distinct impression that contact with the outside world was made only with express consent from Administrator Ekstrom. "Looks like I'm not the only one who is off the grid." Ekstrom spoke briefly with one of the guards outside the trailer and then returned to Rachel.
"Good luck," he said.
Then he left. The guard rapped on the trailer door, and it opened from within. A technician emerged and motioned for Rachel to enter. She followed him in. The inside of the PSC was dark and stuffy. In the bluish glow of the lone computer monitor, Rachel could make out racks of telephone gear, radios, and satellite telecommunications devices. She already felt claustrophobic. The air inside was bitter, like a basement in winter.
"Sit here, please, Miss Sexton."
The technician produced a rolling stool and positioned Rachel in front of a flat-screen monitor. He arranged a microphone in front of her and placed a bulky pair of AKG headphones on her head. Checking a logbook of encryption passwords, the technician typed a long series of keys on a nearby device. A timer materialized on the screen in front of Rachel. 00.60 seconds. The technician gave a satisfied nod as the timer began to count down.
1 minute until connection.
He turned and left, slamming the door behind him. Rachel could hear the bolt lock outside.
Great.
As she waited in the dark, watching the 60-second clock slowly count down, she realized that this was the first moment of privacy she'd had since early that morning. She'd woken up today without the slightest inkling of what lay ahead. Extraterrestrial life. As of today, the most popular modern myth of all time was no longer a myth. Rachel was just now starting to sense how truly devastating this meteorite would be to her father's campaign. Although NASA funding had no business being on a political par with abortion rights, welfare, and health care, her father had made it an issue. Now it was going to blow up in his face. Within hours, Americans would feel the thrill of a NASA triumph all over again. There would be teary-eyed dreamers, slack-jawed scientists, children's imaginations running free. Issues of dollars and cents would fade away as petty, overshadowed by this monumental moment. The president would emerge like a phoenix, transforming himself into a hero, while in the midst of the celebration, the businesslike senator would suddenly appear small-minded, a penny-pinching Scrooge with no American sense of adventure. The computer beeped and Rachel glanced up. 5 seconds. The screen in front of her flickered suddenly, and a blurry image of the White House seal materialized on screen. After a moment, the image dissolved into the face of President Herney.
"Hello, Rachel," he said, a mischievous glint in his eye. "I trust you've had an interesting afternoon?"